Welcome, everyone. It's so good to see you all. Welcome to Adult Ed After Worship on this wonderful Sunday morning. It's an honor and joy to learn and to have conversations with you all. I'm Lynn Scales. I'm the part-time pastor for Mission and Outreach here at Nassau Presbyterian Church, and it has been so fun to work on Bending the Moral Arc with Pam and with Barb and Denise, and as it's spread out and we've gained more partners, and we are continuing to do that work, and we're looking forward to sharing a little bit more about it. I'm going to open us in prayer, and then I'm going to turn it over to Pam. Let's pray. Holy and gracious God, we give you thanks for this day, that we can be reminded of your love in the flowing waters of baptism, that you refresh us, that you call us to transformation, and that you call us to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with you. We ask that you be with us in this day, at this time. Amen.
Let's see if this... Can you hear me okay? Good. Okay, first, Len, thanks, and thank you for your husband's words this morning. So it's really nice to see you all here, and I'm going to start us with this video, which is Facing the Unpretty Things About Our Country's History. It was filmed here in the sanctuary and in the sanctuary of Witherspoon Street Presbyterian Church. I'm going to start us with that, filmed in October and screened nationally in November. So we'll start there, and then we'll carry on. Excuse me, hold on. It was nationally, okay. It has since been awarded the 221 Associated Press Church Award of Excellence in the Video Educational Category. Okay, so that's how we got started a little over 2 years ago, and Len and Denise and Barb. Roz was part of those first discussions. In fact, we are Moral Arc because of your suggestion. I don't know whether you remember that, but.
No, it was Pam Johnson who was on the video who said we need to start talking to each other. And then made the whole structure. Without her, we wouldn't be.
Okay. I just said the name. Okay, so. So this is how we are now. We're lay-led, and we meet regularly in sort of an irregular kind of way. Leadership rotates from meeting to meeting. We base our discussions around pre-selected multimedia. Sometimes it's Twitter. Sometimes it's Trevor Noah. Sometimes it's a sermon. Sometimes it's a newspaper article. And in April, members of both groups, with Len's help, applied for and received a Synod of the Northeast Innovation Grant to support the work, mission, and the spread of the Moral Arc model. So now, what I'm going to, first of all, if you're part of a Moral Arc group, would you stand up right now so we can, so other people can see who you are? Thank you. Okay, so what we're going to do now is we've got people, a couple of people from each group. We have questions, and they're going to be in conversation to kind of discuss what we're doing. So we've got Cedric from the group that is kind of being led by Karen Brown and Denise, or facilitated, we shouldn't say led. And we have Tracy. Here you are. So if you guys would come up here. And we have Frank Yort from the group that Barb and I facilitate. And we thought Grace Kimbrough would be here, but Barb's going to step in for her. So I'm going to give you kind of discussion questions. Spoiler alert, they've seen the questions. So, and I'm just going to ask you for your thoughts. So I'm going to start with this one. And Michelle, thank you for your help on the questions. Morlock conversations are a journey. Some of you have been with us since the beginning. Thank you. In the nick of time. So thanks. Okay, you ready for this?
Yes.
Okay. So what I started saying is moral arc conversations are a journey. Some of you have been with us since the beginning, and some are newer. For those of you who wanted to join, what did you think when you first heard about bending the moral arc and that the group of people from both churches would be coming together to talk about racial issues? I'm going to give you a break since you're last in, but since you were there from the very beginning. Frank, you were there from the very beginning. Why don't you?
What did I think? I'm an immigrant. I came.
Can you hear him okay?
Now it should be on.
You hear him okay? Say something.
Anything. 1, 2, 3. Okay. All right, I'll project anyway. Like I said, I'm an immigrant. I came to this country in 1965. What I remember back then was there was stuff going on in Newark and Detroit and Watts, and I thought it was a little strange. And then I remember Rodney King getting beat up, and was, although there weren't any cell phones back then, that got caught up. And what I thought about George Floyd is like still going on. It's still happening. Nothing has moved. Nothing has changed. Nothing has gotten any better. So that was my thought in starting this. And I thought it was kind of disgraceful, to say the least. So that's why I sort of got roped into doing this, I guess.
So Tracy, I'm going to move to you now since you're a little bit newer.
Okay, so thank you. Everyone can hear me? Thank you for this. So the question is, what did I think when I got in? Yeah, okay. So, you know, first of all, my experience obviously is different. This is not something that I'm new to. I just want to say, you know, I wasn't born then, but I will say that this is my life. I mean, the issues with race and how I navigate in the world in terms of the racism and you know, sexism and all of that, that is part of my life. It always has been. And every space that I go into at some point that, you know, I encountered it. But so why did I get involved in this group? I didn't get involved in this group, I can say, willingly. I kind of got dragged in it, sort of kicking and screaming, you're from Witherspoon, we need representation, because I was a little skeptical about what this group was going to do. I was a little skeptical having, you know, lived my life and understanding you know, the systemic racism within our society. I was a little skeptical about any change. When Denise asked me, I was like, oh. But then I agreed, and I think it has been a really good experience. We have some very interesting discussions. There's pushback, which I love. There's, you know, conversations that I couldn't imagine having with people. I have learned a lot, so it's not just a one-sided sort of conversation. It's not a one-sided sort of learning. And there's still a lot of work to do, a lot of work to be done. And, you know, for that, I look forward to it. So that's how I got involved.
Anyone else? Yeah. Grace is next. And
hello, everyone. You probably can hear me without the mic.
I just kind of like that she said pushback, and I thought it was a good one.
Barbara Fleif got me involved. She called me and said, we got this moral art group. George Floyd had just happened. We were in the midst of the beginning of COVID. There was a lot of things going on. And I said, well, this is a good opportunity to sit back and meet people with the same thoughts, with different thoughts, and to listen, learn, and then you learn to like everyone. So the experience over the last 2 years has really been rewarding. We've come together. We have not always agreed, but we have agreed to disagree. And we've worked on a lot. We've learned a lot. I think the last thing we're working on, which may surprise everyone, is I think it's the 13th Amendment? The 13th Amendment, which says that there's an abolishment of slavery, which there absolutely isn't.
Right. Except for the
commission. Except with in the commission of a crime, you can be a slave or an indentured servant. And a lot of people aren't aware that this language still exists in the 13th Amendment.
Cedric, just a little background. Cedric is the first member we have who is not part of either the Witherspoon Nassau congregation, so he's kind of a step to the future.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Cedric Edwards. I'm a deacon at my church in Philadelphia called East Bethel Baptist Church. And how I heard about bending the moral arc, I met Karen Barrels many years ago. I'm a locomotive engineer from New Jersey Transit. And we have a regular bunch of passengers, and I met Karen that way. So she was telling me about this, and I thought it was very interesting. And I asked if there was ever an opening, you know, I would really like to join this conversation. I did 20 years in the United States Air Force, so I've been exposed to many, many cultures and ways of life, but I have never heard blacks and whites and whatever talking like this group does. And it was very important because George Floyd changed everyone. It changed everyone. And one of the things I want people to know is that this has been going on forever for us. You know, people are finally starting to see because of smartphones and people taking them out and recording. But some people have no idea that these type of things actually happen to people. And real quickly, like for instance, I shared this with the group, I got pulled over by the police, state troopers on 295. And I shouldn't have, but I took off my seatbelt to lean over to get my documents out of the vehicle. You know, he didn't know what I was doing, but he came up to the passenger side and I asked him, "Officer, how you doing? Why you stopped me?" He looked in my car and said, "Because you don't have a seatbelt on." Now, I absolutely, you know, had a seatbelt on. You know, I absolutely had a seatbelt on. I just took it off to get my documents. And I told the officer, you know, that's not true. I took it off to get the documents. And then he ran my numbers and he let me go. But that kind of stuff happens to us every day. You know, I can't say your experience. I just don't know. You don't look like me. You know, anything, police, the bank, the mortgage. We've been dealing with this for a long, long, long time. And when I heard about this bending the moral arc, people who didn't look like me actually cared. I was thrilled, and I'm gracious that you guys let me become a part of this group. So thank you, and God bless.
Thank you. So I don't care who starts with this one, but we've talked about a lot of really interesting topics, and I'd like you each to just say one or two that you have found. Frank, why don't you start? You're holding the stick.
Okay. The one that I found most challenging, and I'm still struggling with it, although I have changed my mind, is the question of reparations. And I used to think that it was a moot point, and that it wouldn't help this situation. And I changed my mind in terms of, I think is a just thing. I just don't know how to make it happen or how to do it fairly or how to do it in a way that doesn't further alienate and separate us as a people. So that's the one that I would say has been a conversation that has been most challenging for me.
Either way.
I was going to say restitution. We kind of changed the name a couple times. People were like, we didn't like the name restitution. I said, okay, we're on the 100-yard line. We got to move to the 150-yard line. So every time we have to change the name to be acceptable. But if you look, other groups received reparations, which means repairing. And restitution, you can look it up, what it means. It all ends up the same. The Japanese received it. We know what happened in the Holocaust over in Germany. People received, and it gave them a level playing field. And what a lot of people don't understand in the history of this country, you know, the first insurance companies insured slaves. They were the first commodity on the in the insurance. So therefore, lots of people made lots of money for lots of years. We're in the 400 years now. So for lots of years, it wasn't everyone. We have recent immigrants. We have people that immigrated in the 1900s. But people did get wealthy off of the backs of slaves. And then when the slaves were freed, they were free to do what? At first they allowed them, because they were skilled workers, to work. But because they were the only skilled workers, here comes unions. So other people took their jobs away. So there's a lot of history that people don't know about. And another one is the 1619 project. It's a book now, but it was first a newspaper article in the New York Times. And I think if everyone reads this, and you can take your own perception of it, even though she's not a historian, but you can look at history itself, and there's a lot of truth in some of the things she wrote. So restitution, reparations, that was a tough, something tough to stroke, you know, that we talked about, and a lot of people begin to understand or understand.
Okay, so I would agree with both of those comments, and that was a hard one, but I'm going to take a different one. And I think that with our group, we sort of weaved in, and we always weave in history. So one of the things, it wasn't difficult to talk about, but I thought it was very interesting, was how the social programs that started in this country excluded African Americans. The New Deal, the GI Bill, the social programs that we see now as only, I guess, targeting African Americans, like, for instance, welfare programs. All of this, when these programs first began, explicitly excluded African Americans. And then I also like the historically how wealth building with property was also something that excluded, you know, African Americans. So I like the way what was challenging was educating each other how history is woven into how we treated certain groups. Right. And so these were tough discussions, because we live in a society where we believe that we are in a meritocracy, and trying to challenge that within these discussions was very important. And so that's what I found to be sort of challenging, because individuals don't want to believe that what they have gotten, they've had a little leg up. So when you talk about affirmative action, and I'm going to say this, there's always been white men affirmative action, because if your father went to Harvard, you know, it's a good chance you're going to go to Harvard and your children are going to go to Harvard. And so we don't like to talk about that. And that's a difficult conversation, but it's also true. So I loved the weaving of the history and how wealth has been accumulated, how people have been denied wealth, how people have been denied programs that give gave people a leg up, which also I think is in conjunction with some of the reparation conversations, right? But though the reparations, that's always, or repairing, however we're fashioning it, is always difficult because there's this sort of, well, you're getting something. But you have to understand, throughout history, there were people who always got things, and there were always people who were excluded. And so the idea that there was a meritocracy has to be challenged. So I'm going to pass it.
Thank you. Courageous conversation. All of our conversations are very courageous and challenging, really. Very challenging, and to get a grip on them is not always easy, especially considering your background, where you came from, you know, your experiences in life. So there were several. But the one that's going around right now, we had this last month. Was critical race theory last month? Yes. I am stooped about this topic. Why is knowing all the history a problem? I don't know. It's really, it's like on Friday, a friend of mine, white guy, said, listen to this. And he played something on his phone with some crazy guy spouting all this stuff. There's no bombing in Ukraine. And he said to me, my friend said to me, yeah, man, the people going over there with their kids, they're on skateboards, and there's no bombing over there. I said, you believe that? He did. He did. And now critical race theory is, you know, it's leading to so much. The book bannings and teachers being fired. And I just don't understand. That was a very tough and still is a very tough subject for me. So... Like I said, all the conversations are courageous and tough, but that one, I still don't get a grasp on why people feel the way they do about history. Thank you.
Thank you. Before I start the next question, I have to go back and think about when we first started this and we were planning and not realizing how courageous the conversations would be, but Barb and I, well, we worked the first groups together, and we had every minute programmed because I was just really nervous about it and really uncomfortable, and would people answer right and how would it work and what if nobody said anything. And after probably almost every time we met, as soon as we close the meeting, I call Barbara and go, how do you think, what do you think? And she'd say, first of all, stop apologizing for everything, and second, have the faith. So the next question is a little bit related to that. Talking about race for both black and white people can be uncomfortable, and some may be apprehensive for fear that you may say the wrong thing. So what advice would you, the four of you, give to people starting this journey? Who's got the mic? Okay, Frank.
Wow, okay. I could pass the baton, yeah. But I am looking here. I seem to be the only melanin-deprived one on the panel, true. I say this often, and my family sometimes gets on me, but intent matters. And as you may have noticed, I have an accent, and I often get asked about the accent and where does it come from and what have you. And sometimes it's just a conversation started. It's totally innocent. People are just interested. And sometimes you can tell, or at least I can tell, that it's not innocent. It's a way to say to me, you're not one of us. You're different and you don't belong here, and go back to where you came from. So... yes, these conversations are awkward sometimes. But if people are genuinely trying to understand and see what's going on and see it from a different point of view, I think that folks can tell. And I think that you might feel uncomfortable, but you're not, if you come from a good place, you're not saying anything that is going to offend other people. At least that's my opinion.
I think the first thing is listening. A lot of times we come from different backgrounds, different environments, different cultures. And so if you listen, you're able to understand why the person feels the way they do. And like I said, they grew up differently. They were different political views on either side. So if you listen, a lot of it's more listening and understanding that the other person doesn't necessarily have to think the way you think to get to that equal level playing field. You can come to an agreement in the middle if you just listen. And I learned to listen a lot and to understand everybody's story is different and everyone has a story.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I would just say that, you know, these conversations are tough for everybody because people don't want to offend. They don't want to say the wrong thing because we live in a country, although we call it a melting pot, I look at it as kind of like the big salad, right? We all have our tomatoes here and our cucumbers and we're all separate, but we're in the same sort of bowl. So I think that you have to be brave. If we are Christians, we have to trust that we are doing it with Christian love. We have to bring those stereotypes that we have grown up with and bring them out and acknowledge and admit them. And that's tough, right? Some of the people in our group have talked about that. But it's tough to say, you know, I grew up thinking this about this person or this group and this about this other person. So you have to be brave. You have to be loving, as I said, if we're Christians. And you can't be afraid to say the wrong thing because you're going to say the wrong thing.
Thank you. I think, or I believe, and I feel that it's simple. Just follow Jesus. Love thy neighbor. My mom always taught me and my brothers and sisters to respect everyone. I have never, ever, I'm 62 years old right now, I have never, ever had a problem with any race, ever. Individuals, yes. Yes, absolutely. But a different race, never in my life because of Jesus and the way my parents taught me. You respect everyone. Until, you know, otherwise, so they give you reason not to. And you learn. Because some of the guys in our group, man, they shared their lives with us and how things went and how their experience with other races. They didn't like them or they had some kind of issue until they met them. You know, until they got to know them. You know, and one of our members had a very poignant question. It's like, why do you have to meet someone to humanize them? I'll never forget that as long as I live. That was her. I'll never forget that question. Thank you for that question, Trace. But it really is that simple. Jesus. It really is that simple. Thank you.
So that actually was a good kind of lead-in. Why do we're two congregations together? Well, kind of three when you're here, Cedric. But why is it important that we're doing this, and why is our Christianity important in this? And I think that's kind of where you were starting, and if Frank's brave enough, he can take the mic. Or Cedric, do you want to? I mean, I think that was kind of your answer, but
yes.
If you have more to say, say it.
Yes, yes. It's important because following Jesus, we all know that this guy was just, he was perfect, the perfect lamb. And he loved everyone. And Yeah, sometimes people make it difficult to love them, but, you know, we can pray for them, right? We can pray for them. And I've known, like I said, I'm 20 years in the military, so I experienced a lot of different nationalities, a lot of cultures. And people, for some reason, they do have issues. I mean, biases, you know, of people that don't look like them. Now, I don't want to single out white people, but, you know, in this country and in this government, that's an issue. And it's bending the moral arc. I think this could be a movement. I really do think this could be a movement around the country, because these people are this group is, they are fantastic. And as long as we do this in love and in Christ, it'll work.
Yeah, I'm going to take a little different tack on what you said about why do we need to meet people in terms of, in order to humanize them. And I think that we do. And one of the things that separates us is that, you know, I talked about 1965. We're still, in many ways, separate societies where we mostly associate with people who are in our own socioeconomic level. And we take shortcuts because it's hard to think about how we are similar when everybody that we associate with sort of looks like us and the other ones are different, which is one of the things that I found particularly troubling in our political environment when people talk about real Americans, and we want real Americans to be predominant, and we want to do things for the real Americans. And I always wonder who are the unreal Americans that are being referred to. And I can't, did I even address the question? No. I kind of got off on a tangent here. Pass the mic. Pass the mic, yeah.
As Christians, why is it important that we're doing this?
That's a good question. I, in the group, and everyone in the group I was in, know I always took the middle. Especially when it became political, I said you have the right wing and the left wing of the same bird. We need to kill the bird. I said the bird is keeping us divided, and it's two different wings, and it's the same bird. We just need to kill it or change it. That was always my philosophy. And once we, once again, came with love, I think our with both committees, I think love, there was a lot of love involved. I remember we met at Delta's, and some of us, we were on Zoom for 2 years, you have to understand. We've never seen each other face to face. And we were on these meetings and heated discussions, and I mean, really powerful stuff. And at the end, we always said a prayer. We opened up with a prayer, and we ended with a prayer. And you felt so good after you zoomed off of Zoom. It was just like, wow, we really, really had good, meaningful conversations. And so it's important, with like you said, keeping Jesus in front and that love. And once again, for all these political people, you have the right wing and the left wing. It's the same bird. It just keeps us divided, and we have to find a way to come into a medium in the middle.
So why as Christians should we be doing this, I guess? Well, first of all, you know, God's greatest commandment is to love, and love is hard. It's hard to love somebody who is a MAGA person. It's hard. And so I think that we have to be deliberate in what we do. We are, as Christians, we have to be very deliberate in saying that I am going to address this issue, and I, as a Christian, I am going to make a difference, because this is what Christians do. This is the gospel of Jesus Christ, right? This is what we do. And we can't sit and wait for someone else to do it. We have to do it. We have to be deliberate. We have to be proactive. And I think that that is our mandate. And if we don't, we can't call ourselves Christians.
Oh, okay, you guys. So I'm mindful of the time, and I actually, that was a perfect last line of this group.
Mic drop.
But we have some little time for questions. If you have questions, or if you just want to hang around afterwards and talk with us, we would welcome that. But any questions? Cedric, you're taking care of that, right? On your own.
You're asking me? Okay. So is this group doing anything about it? We talk a lot, and we're moving towards what I say is action, because, you know, talk is cheap. But it's important, right? So yes, in a word. How we do it, I don't know if we're there yet, but we are getting there, because it's very important, the way that we have warped history. Even more so, when I was growing up, we there were three things, I think, you know, talking about slavery. We were slaves, Abraham Lincoln freed us, and Martin Luther King gave us our civil rights. And that was the extent of it. So we have to move beyond that. And I know both of these groups are always involved and talking about and moving towards action. When you look at this video, for instance, this is a national video with a national award where there are going to be so many people who are going to be influenced by it. The innovation grant that, you know, Denise and Len were very instrumental in getting, moving forward to get more groups into action. Because, you know, words without action are meaningless. So that's my answer. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have source materials. Oh, those materials that we have used and put together as the two groups are amazing. Amazing resources that you can really look at and read. And the things that we do every month, our groups, are in those resource materials. Yeah. Oh, please. Well,
can I piggyback on that real quick? I teach pickleball. I'm training this lady in pickleball who's in the healthcare over hospital in Philadelphia, and she's telling me how they're having these conversations. She doesn't want feel guilty for her kids to feel guilty. Let me tell you what they do in Germany. And I lived in Germany for 4 years. I said, in high school, kids go to the graveyard when they're a Jew. High school students, and they clean them, and they plant fresh flowers. I said, because if you don't understand your history, you'll repeat it. Mm-hmm. and they don't want to repeat it. I said, and the kids don't feel guilty in Germany. This is something that they do, and it makes them feel good that they're doing it. I said, so why would you feel guilty about knowing the truth about this nation? You didn't live 400 years ago. It wasn't you. This wasn't you, but it happened.
And it's still happening. Yeah. And so are we that delicate that we can't handle truth? I don't think so.
Barbara wanted to say something.
The thing I wanted to say the most about this, because I was with it from the beginning, that the important thing, we've been doing it for 2 years, and the most important thing for me, which everybody can hear me.
That's probably true.
So that kind of shut me down. So when we came to this group because of George Floyd, and that we've been doing this for 2 years, we have really gotten to know each other. And the most important things for me is that it's not what necessarily we do outside, but it's transformative for us individually, because we do it and we learn and we become friends, and we become friends across bridges. And whoever said, I think that we have to do this everywhere. This coming to get to know people over 2 years in intimate groups, and you feel safe, you celebrate with them. So for me, as a testimony about why we are doing courageous conversation, it's not about changing the world, it's about changing ourselves.
One of the questions we've been dealing with in the group is, what can you do? This is a huge problem. We're a small group. And one of the things that I've been involved in with Karen and with the group is learning more about the real history and the importance of African Americans in the Princeton community. And what I've done with that information is I've led a series of hikes around the town that give the real history. And I'd be glad to do it again with anyone who wants.
Thank you for that. The Witherspoon Jackson Historical and Cultural Society has done, I'm Shirley Satterfield, I'm the historian of the African American community. And when we made it the 20th Historic District, I said, we can't stop here. So I started the Witherspoon Jackson Historical and Cultural Society to keep our history, to understand our history, to appreciate our history, and to respect our history. And then I said, we can't stop here. So there are 29 heritage plaques of African-American establishments that either have disappeared or people just don't know about them. So we have put up all of them except five, because they have to go on buildings, and the buildings haven't given us permission to put them up there yet. But these plaques, if you follow them and you go, you're here and you go to the next place, you will learn our history about the establishments that used to be there, but not the complete history. So if you ever want to know the complete history, here I am.
So I think we're kind of finished our formal time. And if you want more information, reach out to Len or to me or to anybody in this room. You saw who stood up for the moral arc. And we just really appreciate your listening to us today. And I am so grateful to be part of this congregation.